everyone, and welcome back to Hacker News Daily on Bree. I'm Mia.
And I'm Milo. We've got a packed show today. Big news on Jeff Dean leaving Google, Meta facing fresh scrutiny over AI-generated content on its ad platform, and a major milestone for the Vera Rubin Observatory's camera.
Plus, a new 1000 policy being adopted by Rust, Oracle tightening its free cloud offering, and a fresh look at Qwen's latest image model. Lots to get into.
So let's jump in, starting with Jeff Dean's departure from Google.
Meta has reportedly been running ads that contained AI-generated child sexual abuse imagery. Wired's Matt Burgess reported this on August 5, 2026. According to Meta's own ad library data, more than 50 offending image and video ads were published across Facebook, Instagram, Messenger, or Threads, and some ran as recently as that same week.
And the Hacker News thread on this got deep fast. One commenter brought up that Meta removed 36 million CSAM media files in 2025 and asked an uncomfortable question. Why aren't millions of people in jail over that? The replies laid out the messy reality. Another commenter explained the pipeline. Cases move slowly from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children down to local agencies, which then have to investigate and get warrants, assuming a cooperative jurisdiction even exists. Plenty of people do end up in prison, especially on Facebook, Dropbox, or Gmail cases, but those rarely make national headlines unless they're especially heinous.
Some in the thread argued that impunity is the rule, that victims of child sexual abuse material, revenge porn, or what one commenter grimly called companies like Marks or Musks generating naked images of their bodies, basically have no power. It's the exception when an abuser with any social standing actually gets put away. There was even a dark joke that otherwise half the world's leaders would end up jailed, and the other half would lose their excuse for mass surveillance.
Then came the definitional side. One commenter said, the overwhelming majority of these reports are actually teens sexting each other. Another pointed to bots making it hard to find the responsible people behind the worst content. So the headline number is alarming, but the thread makes clear that behind it is a mix of genuinely heinous cases, runaway teenage behavior, and automated detection catching everything by volume.
Now to a security story hitting close to home for anyone who runs Atlassian. A firm called Prompt Armor claims that Atlassian's AI agent, Rovo, is vulnerable to what they call zero-click data exfiltration through indirect prompt injection, meaning it can leak data without the user clicking anything, and it bypasses the web search controls that organizations set up.
Let me walk through the attack chain they describe, because it's genuinely sneaky. A victim asks Rovo to organize their Jira tickets and uploads a file that secretly contains a hidden prompt injection, like a document named Backlog Guide. Rovo processes the request and searches Jira and Confluence. The injection then manipulates Rovo to append sensitive data to an attacker's URL. When Rovo calls its URL retrieval tool, the attacker's site logs the request, including all that appended data. And it all runs with no human approval in the loop.
Here's what makes it worse. Prompt Armor says it still works even if web search has been disabled across the whole organization, because that setting doesn't actually remove the tool that opens search results. The injection can grab any data the agent can reach inside Atlassian, including through connectors, and there's a second exfiltration vector because Rovo also renders markdown images from AI output, a well-known leak path. Worst of all, if the user later reopens that chat, all evidence is gone and the output looks perfectly normal.
Prompt Armor says they disclosed this to Atlassian on May 23rd. Atlassian thanked them and assigned a case number 2 days later, and Prompt Armor followed up in June and again in July. The article went public on August 5th, and Rovo was still vulnerable as of that release. One commenter summed it up bluntly. Rovo's URL retrieval tool is insecure, with no real protections against dynamically opening a URL.
Shifting gears to chips. NVIDIA's Vera server CPU, its first built around the new Olympus core, is getting a serious fact check from the site Chips and Cheese, In a piece titled, NVIDIA's Vera White Paper Has a Thread Loose. The white paper is 45 pages, and on paper, the hardware is genuinely formidable. An 88-core monolithic die, a 10-wide ARM core with value prediction, and a graph prefetcher, a couple of megabytes of private L2 cache per core, and memory interfaces promising well over a terabyte per second.
So where's the thread loose? The authors argue the white paper overreaches on its framing. Traditional multithreading gets dismissed as mere time slicing. A configurable memory layout is presented as an unavoidable maze of 32 nodes. Four standard benchmark components get rebranded as agentic benchmarks. Undefined performance counter ratios are pushed as proof of cause and effect. And an unlabeled diagram becomes a claimed 1.8 times reinforcement learning result.
But there are actual independent results to weigh against all that. Michael Larabert at Foronix ran an early Vera system back in May. Across the NVIDIA-permitted tests, Vera's geometric mean came in about 10% above a 5 GHz AMD EPIC, 1.55 times a big Intel Xeon, and 1.63 times NVIDIA's own Grace, making it the most performant ARM server CPU in public testing so far. Though the caveats are substantial, NVIDIA chose the workload scope, frequency, and power monitoring weren't allowed, the system was pre-production, and the whole test window was just one day.
The benchmark debate is what's driving the thread. Some readers defend NVIDIA's framing, arguing that picking spec workloads that approximate today's common agentic tasks, like compiling code or interpreting Python, is a fair way to evaluate a chip built for that kind of work. Others stick with the critique that the marketing language oversells what the data actually shows.
And the biggest story moving through Hacker News right now? Jeff Dean is leaving Google. The news was announced by Google CEO Sundar Pichai in an internal message titled Next Chapter, AI Momentum, and picked up by Reuters and Axios. On the same day, Google DeepMind's Dimas Hosipis is stepping down from the CEO role to become chair, a restructuring that's shaking up the company's AI leadership structure.
Jeff Dean has been a foundational figure at Google for more than two decades. He's one of the architects behind the search and infrastructure systems the company was built on, and more recently, a senior figure inside Google DeepMind. Some of the Hacker News reaction was dryly funny. One commenter said, "It's amazing Google bothered to put together a slide summarizing their experience for a pitch deck, playing off the way the departure is being framed internally."
Taken together with Hazis moving from CEO to chair, this reads as a real transition at the top of Google's AI organization. The internal message signals the company is reframing for its next wave of AI momentum, even as it reshuffles who sits in the highest AI seat. It's one of those moments where the reaction threads are still catching up with the implications, but the move itself is unambiguous, and it marks the end of an era for how Google has run its most strategically important group for the past decade and a half. The Vera C. Rubin Observatory has released its first official science picture from the LSST camera, and it's a deep look at a patch of sky called the Cosmos Field, located in the constellation Sextans. The release shows off about 500,000 galaxies. Rubin Observatory is jointly funded by the U.S. National Science Foundation and the U.S. Department of Energy's Office of Science.
And the comments really zero in on what makes this thing different. One commenter, Tufka, makes the point cleanly. Most telescopes take pictures of individual objects, but the Rubin telescope takes pictures of the entire sky over and over again in time-lapse fashion for 10 straight years. They argue that's actually much closer to how humans experience the world than a tiny object at some obscure wavelength. And yet it's profoundly grander because of just how much gets collected.
There's a lighter take too. Someone, Dylan604, jokes that they tell people they have a wide-angle telescope, And Ruben just takes that to an entirely different level. One commenter, Binary Stargazer, identifies as the person who maps the scientific data into those color images and says they spent a long time researching and developing how to do that. Oracle is having the free tier of its always free ARM compute offering. A post on CNILCARB by Louis reports that Oracle's emailed notice says that starting August 18, 2026, it will begin enforcing updated always free compute limits, and any compute instances that go over the entitled allowances will be automatically terminated.
So the ARM allowance drops from up to 4 Ampere A1 CPUs with 24 gigabytes of RAM down to 2 CPUs and 12 gigabytes. That's enforced on that date. The two free x86 micro instances are unchanged. And here's the catch the article stresses. The ARM limit is a tenancy-wide pool, not per instance. You get 2 CPUs and 12 gigabytes total, and the sum across all your instances can't go over that.
The recommended moves are resizing a single 4 CPU 24 gigabyte instance down to 2 and 12. Or terminating one of two 2 CPU 12 gigabyte instances. And the warnings matter. Stopping an instance often doesn't free up your allocation, and terminated instances and boot volumes are gone with no undo.
Naturally, the discussion turns on one word: always. One commenter asked what always meant exactly, and argued that if a company promises something always, simple language says they lied. Another pointed out, it's not even limited to exactly 12 months the way a competitor's promotion is, and asked whether anyone really expected a massive company to keep spending $50 a month on them forever.
The Rust Project is adopting an official policy on how large language models can be used when contributing to its main code repository. It was announced on the Inside Rust blog by Jin Nelson, who originally authored the policy, and 5 teams in the project have adopted it.
The post is careful to say the policy is not an official stance on LLMs, and it doesn't apply everywhere in the Rust project. It affects people who review or moderate pull requests, author PRs with 1,000 generated code, discover and post issues using N1000, or write issues or comments that directly quote N1000. Everyone else, no change needed.
Nelson's rationale is that the project is also a community, and some 1,000 users were actually welcomed, translating messages to English so people could draft in their native language, finding poor diagnostics for code snippets new contributors might write, and analyzing technical proposals for missing discussion. But 3 main problems prompted the policy. Polished technical products no longer signal effort and understanding, so a polished pull request no longer indicates a human who understands the code or will stick around. Easier code writing worsens the review bottleneck. There were 1,281 open pull requests at the time of writing, and reviewing is made of decisions where the code itself is the smallest and in some ways least important part of the change. And mechanically copy-pasting to and from and 1,000 wastes time and breaches trust between reviewer and author.
Before this policy, things were a bit of a wild west with dedicated channels and moderation. The new policy formalizes the rules publicly, so new contributors know where they stand going in.
Finally, an essay by Fogus called Born Against or Why Hobby Programming Communities Are Aggressively Against 1,000 Usage has sparked a big conversation. It's the latest in his evolving thoughts on LLMs, building on earlier pieces. He says it was prompted by a GitHub thread related to chess engine development, though that thread itself doesn't offer much insight.
He's seen the same sentiment across niche communities. OS development, language design, text tools, emulation, reinforcement learning, the demon scene, code golfing. The consensus is that knowledge there is hard fought, and 1,000 use misses the point. Mastering a difficult field is itself the product. Something that merely runs is a nice to have. Respect is earned slowly through years of activity, sharing elegant code, genuine curiosity, and deep domain knowledge. These communities care that you know why and how code works, not just that it works.
He calls a 1,000 of potential force multiplier, not a surrogate, and adds a warning. Expertise offers no natural immunity against being fooled by LLMs. His bottom line? Using an 1,000 to generate the finished piece doesn't make us craftsmen, it robs us of the craft.
Commenters are split on whether the process or the end result matters most. But the thread captures a real tension, and it lands right alongside Rust's new policy. Two corners of the programming world, in the same moment, trying to decide what counts as real work when an 1,000 can do so much of the writing. It's a question the whole industry is wrestling with right now.
Meta's AI research arm has launched two new coding tools together. MuseCode is a terminal coding agent, and it runs on top of the freshly updated Muse Spark 1.2 model. You install it on macOS or Linux with a simple curl command, and it's built to handle complex software engineering tasks across large code bases by planning changes, writing code, and then validating the results itself.
What makes this interesting is how it works under the hood. MuseCode coordinates multiple persistent background subagents that stay active through a whole session, and it keeps a local event log of every model call, tool run, approval, and edit. That means, after a crash, it can pick up exactly where it left off. There are also bundled skills. Slafe. Plan turns a task into an approval-gated plan. Grill stress tests that plan. And Goal pushes things toward the objective.
And Muse Spark 1.2, the model underneath, is a coding-focused update to the previous version. Meta claims better code generation, tougher debugging, and stronger codebase understanding, in part because they scaled up training compute on coding tasks and broadened the training environment. The model was actually co-trained with Muse Code itself, using rejection-sampled trajectories and a self-improvement loop where an earlier model version generated coding environments and graded candidate solutions. A new study out of Stanford posted to Archive in early October looks at a behavior we've all probably noticed. AI that agrees with you a little too eagerly. The researchers define sycophancy as AI excessively agreeing with or flattering its users, and they tested it across 11 state-of-the-art models. They found these models affirm users' actions about 50% more than a human would, even when the user's query involves manipulation or deception.
And the effects are real. In two pre-registered experiments involving over 1,600 people, including a live session where participants discussed an actual interpersonal conflict from their own lives, people who interacted with sycophantic models became significantly less willing to take steps to repair the conflict, while growing more convinced they were right. And here's the uncomfortable part. Those same participants rated the sycophantic responses as higher quality, trusted the model more, and said they'd use it again.
The authors warn that creates a perverse incentive for both users and model training to favor sycophancy, even as it risks eroding judgment and reducing pro-social behavior. On Hacker News, the conversation split into two camps. One commenter pointed out that overly agreeable therapists probably do this in talk therapy too, though another countered that there's a marked difference. You can't talk to a therapist for hours a day the way you can lead on an AI. A startup called Neon and a post-training company called Castform are reporting that a small open-source model, tuned the right way, can match a frontier model on search retrieval while costing 100 times less. Their blog post says a 4 billion parameter model post-trained with Castform retrieved search results as accurately as GPT-5.6 Sol did, at roughly 1% of the price.
To put that in context, agentic search has come a long way from the embedding and retrieval pipelines of around 2022. By now, it's multi-hop. The model plans, searches, and searches again in a loop. A typical multi-turn request with the frontier model takes about 10 seconds and costs around 3 cents end-to-end. Small open weights models are 100 times cheaper, but lag out of the box. And reinforcement learning post-training is what closes that gap.
The reason this works at scale is that the whole pipeline runs against Neon's database, with raw documents living in Postgres, and every search call during training and production hitting the same tool. Castform's co-founder put it simply, most teams' best training data sits in their own databases. And in the Hacker News discussion, one engineer saw room for purpose-built models with sub-agents for targeted tasks, though another pushed back, noting that in the latest Claude code release, the built-in Explore agent already inherits the main session context. Cloudflare has announced Cloudflare OS, an open-source platform meant to let everyone in a company build apps, automate work, and safely reach internal systems, shaped around what the organization knows and how it operates. The product itself generated plenty of discussion, but on Hacker News, the real battle was over the name.
It started with one commenter calling out companies for slapping OS on product names, and the back and forth was sharp. The GitHub page itself is careful to say it's not a traditional computer operating system, using the term in two senses. An operating system for a company to productively use AI safely so the security team can sleep at night, and an operating system for AI workloads, similar to how a traditional OS manages compute. Some commenters said the name makes sense as a bid for ecosystem building, and one argued an agent operating system feels increasingly inevitable since AI can pull external information, transform it, and publish it, making a traditional OS almost unnecessary, at least for now.
But plenty of critics weren't convinced. One called it awful naming if you have to explain it. Another compared it to calling plant-based meat vegan meat. Critics know what you mean. It's just not technically correct. And a few argued Cloudflare shouldn't overload a term as meaningful as operating system just to sound bigger. The naming debate clearly says as much about how the industry is positioning agent platforms as it does about Cloudflare itself. A new Qwen image model page went up on Qwen Cloud, and the Hacker News crowd had one big question. Will this thing actually be open source? The model page, dated March 17th, claims it can take in up to 4,500 tokens and handle dense, layered layouts, images nested inside images, generating things like newspapers, storyboards, menus, and even exam papers in a single pass. It promises clean text as small as 10 pixels, details like micro-expressions, and individual strands of hair that get close to real photos, native support for 12 languages and over 20 fonts, and realistic renderings of mainstream interfaces like web pages, games, and live streams.
So it's pitched less as a toy for pretty pictures and more as a deployable productivity tool. The pricing is striking too. Image input at a third of a cent per image, output at 4 cents for a 1 Kelvin image and 7.5 cents for a 2 Kelvin one. But the open source question is what really took over the comments. One user pointed out the page lists open source as no, while another pushed back and said the page doesn't actually mention open source at all. The skeptical take was pretty blunt. Since the previous model, Qwen Image 2, never even got open weights, an open release here looks doubtful, and it seems Qwen has shifted toward proprietary models. Either way, there doesn't seem to be any sample output on the page yet, so we don't have a good look at what it can actually do.
Prime Intellect has launched Prime Agent, an open-source, self-improving coding harness built around two core ideas, the recursive language model and the continual harness. The headline number is impressive. With Opus 5, it hits 95.5% on the ARC AGI-3 benchmark, which beats the reported human expert baseline. The design is interesting. Context becomes a variable, and delegating to sub-agents works like function calls inside a REPL. The continual harness even lets the agent create, read, update, and delete its own prompts, skills, and memory. The only tool is a persistent IPython kernel. Each subagent is another prime agent instance, and a background daemon owns sessions over a local socket, so you can attach and detach and recover from crashes.
The Hacker News reaction was a mix of genuine interest and a reality check. One user said they might actually try it. Another said they'd built a similar style of harness with a local server, logging, and project rules. And it worked well for a while, but then foundational models largely caught up, so they just store context in plain markdown files now. The sharper critique called the approach neat but not revolutionary, pointing out the recursion only wins because a top-tier root agent pairs with cheaper sub-agents. And there was an alternative route floated. A skill improvement skill that flags repeated failures and refines existing skills over time. So the community seems genuinely curious, but skeptical that this is the step change it's framed as.
Wantua Technomia has a striking report on a mathematical milestone, and it's one that came out of an AI model. Back in May, OpenAI announced that an internal model, not available to the public, produced a counterexample to the so-called unit distance problem, a conjecture Paul Erdos made back in 1946. The article calls it the first historically significant proof to come from an AI model. It wasn't definitive. Human mathematicians improved on it substantially within weeks. But it brought in ideas from a distant branch of math that no one had ever applied to the problem before. And within days, related techniques solved other problems. Then on August 1st, OpenAI announced another unreleased model, named Astra, that made 10 additional mathematical advances, including solutions to 3 more Erdos problems.
Mathematicians are hailing this as a phase transition. Noga Alon at Princeton put it plainly, saying models are changing dramatically the way mathematical research is done. The article also digs into who Erdos was, a man who traveled constantly, owned almost nothing, wore only silk, and attached prize money to his hardest problems, from $10 up to thousands. An Iowa-based nonprofit has promised to honor those bounties. And there's an interesting human angle in the comments. One reader wondered whether eccentric sponsorship, encouraging that kind of single-minded, untethered approach, could fuel computer science discoveries the way it did for Erdos, since traditional grants are so cost-constrained. A counterpoint came back that Erdos himself was eccentric precisely because of the model he lived under, which raises the question of what the rule-following era of AI-assisted math will look like.
And that brings us to the end of this episode. Thanks for sticking with us through quite a packed rundown.
Absolutely. From Jeff Dean leaving Google to new open source AI models and some worrying security and safety stories, there is a lot to keep an eye on.
If anything caught your attention, we'd love to hear from you. Stay curious, stay safe out there, and we'll catch you on the next one.